Welcome to Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the rare disease community.
Hello, this is Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. We're here today in Herndon, Virginia, speaking with Harsha Rajasimha, founder and CEO of Jiva Informatics Solutions. Harsha is also founder and chairman of the Indo-US Organization for Rare Diseases. He's held both positions for nearly 3 years. Thank you for being with us today, Harsha.
My pleasure, Larry.
Let's begin by talking about rare diseases and specifically your involvement with rare diseases in India, the second most populous nation in the world.
Absolutely. You know, back in 2012, when I first got introduced to rare disease in my family with a child born with a rare congenital disease, I got involved more beyond as a scientist. You know, I was already involved in next generation DNA sequencing, genomic research, including rare disease research for about 12 years before that, including at National Institutes of Health, FDA, and launching clinical genomic diagnostic tests. But this experience of having a child in the family led me to understand the patient perspectives and what the families suffering from rare diseases or having a child with a rare disease would go through. And that led me to co-found the Organization for Rare Diseases in India back in 2013, along with 6 other founding members. And since then, you know, I have founded the Indo-US Organization for Rare Diseases in 2019 to address specific gaps in the global equity for rare disease patients. As we all know, most of the rare disease therapies are developed in the United States and the European Union, and some in Japan. Much of the rest of the world has not been an active participant in clinical development of therapies and orphan drugs. To address this huge gap, particularly between the East and the West, to increase the engagement of patients and researchers located in the Indian subcontinent with the Western world, we founded the Indo-US Organization for Rare Diseases in 2019, and that aims to foster multi-stakeholder collaborations between the two sides.
Specifically in India, what are the rare diseases that cause the most concern?
The Indian government recently launched the National Policy for Rare Disease, and it recognizes around 450 or so diseases named rare diseases officially. But, you know, it's like the muscular dystrophies, lysosomal storage diseases, Rett syndrome, and a bulk of the primary immunodeficiencies and so on. Diseases that have a proper diagnosis and a proper treatment tend to be recognized as a major group of rare diseases, which is where the significant focus has been. Whereas most rare diseases do not yet have a proper diagnostic marker or a diagnostic test. And if they do, 95% of the rare diseases do not have any approved treatment. And as Dr. Christopher Austin, former director of the NCATS at NIH, mentioned, it's going to take us 2,000 years to have at least one treatment for all known rare diseases. And that's just unacceptably slow. So what he has urged the industry and all the stakeholders is to think of out of the box, you know, on how we can significantly accelerate by orders of magnitude the speed of bringing new therapies and diagnostics to market for patients with rare disease.
Just a question, considering the devastation that the coronavirus pandemic has brought upon India, are you concerned that rare diseases might be relegated to the back burner?
Absolutely. It's a huge concern for all patients. Indo-US Rare is a membership-driven organization, and we have about 25 patient organizations, and many of them from India and several from the United States side. Most patient groups in India are concerned that rare diseases are being downgraded in focus and in budget and funding, which was already a huge issue. However, we now have an official national policy for rare disease, which is providing a framework for many patients to really take legal action against the government, even in the High Court of Delhi rulings recently, where the court has directed the government to stand by its national policy, and the cost for one-time treatments, such as gene therapy or other types of one-time treatments, up to significant, I think 15 or 20 lakh rupees has to be made available from the government towards treatment.
Besides India, you're dealing also with the Indian subcontinent. That includes Pakistan, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, Nepal, several other countries. What are the main types of diseases you're seeing in those countries?
It's mainly lysosomal storage diseases and many other diseases. You know, majority of these diseases, Larry, they remain undiagnosed for a long period of time. Many patients do not really pursue a diagnosis, even knowing that there is no treatment and it's some sort of a weird disease, not a known, well-known disease. Many parents and families do not pursue for a diagnosis. And that's been a huge challenge in general in that entire part of that world. But we do get requests from Bangladesh. In fact, we have an active request for travel to Delhi to see a medical expert from a patient located in Bangladesh with mucopolysaccharidosis, MPS, one of the types of MPS. This is an ongoing challenge. What we are looking at is because most of these neighboring countries in the subcontinent do not have a national organization or patient foundations, we got to extend some support wherever possible. As it is, our organization is not as well-resourced to address the grand challenges facing any country, for that matter, and let alone some large countries in that region. But we are doing our best to see how we can leverage technology to disseminate and educate people.
Recently, several years ago, Rare Disease International came into being as an umbrella organization for national rare disease organizations, such as in the US, the National Organization for Rare Disorders, NORD. How much help has this new umbrella group been for you? And are you actively seeking membership in it?
We are actively seeking membership. We have applied at least once and we received feedback that they have asked for more information. The trouble we are having is they are used to a single country focused organizations with feet on the ground in that one country. And we are a unique organization in that we are located, headquartered in the United States and building bridges with India. We have postdoctoral scientists and collaborative organizations located in India, but we span across these two regions of the world. So RDI is still thinking about how best to engage organizations such as Indo-US Rare.
Also, in the case of India, you have specific genetic diseases that are brought about by either its consanguinity or other situations where you find disease in India that you don't find anywhere else in the world. Can you talk about that?
Yes, absolutely. There are diseases which are mysterious. For example, a disease by the name Hundigodu disease, which is located in the southern part of India in the state of Karnataka. There is a village by the name Hundigodu, and several geneticists have been really intrigued by this mysterious disease, which seems to affect a lot of the people in that one village. It looks like it may not be genetic because there has not been any different type of consanguinity in that village compared to the other villages. So it's probably to do with the environmental factors and other things. And there are also other diseases that are little more prevalent in the Indian subcontinent. For example, blood disorders, right? Like hemophilia, thalassemia, sickle cell disease, generally more prevalent in Africa and Middle East and India as well. Some of it is known about the genetic origins, and some of it is environmental probably or unknown yet.
India has become quite well known lately for not only the coronavirus pandemic, but also for production of vaccines internally, and you've also exported COVID vaccines to other countries. What about Indian research in rare disease? Is all the research going on here and in Europe, or do you also have some rare disease specialists in India doing advanced research?
There are some fantastic medical geneticists and scientists doing amazing research in India, although the funding and the scale and the volume of research has been rather low. That's where we want to see change occur, because the funding compared to United States and Europe, we see the map of clinical trials as a reference. And, you know, 80% of clinical trials happens in US and Europe. Remaining 20% happens in the rest of the world. And less than 2% is attributed to India.
Which is interesting because India is 1.3 billion people almost. That brings me to the next question, and that is Geoinformatics Solutions, a company that you founded in February of 2019. Can you talk about this company and what its goals are?
Absolutely, Larry. The goal is really the same, which is I've been focused on for the last 8 years, is how can we bring an order of magnitude acceleration for developing novel therapies to address rare common and other complex diseases, which does require significant innovative thinking and bring technology to its as a savior. So I believe that Jiva was founded primarily to address the huge patient recruitment bottleneck, which is extremely well established in the life science industry. Most of these clinical development processes take 10 to 12 years from when drug is discovered to getting that to patients. And that's just too long. And it can cost over $2.5 billion average cost per drug. And so I have been focused on where are the bottlenecks and how can we make this more efficient. And one of the areas that Jiva is focused on is speeding up the patient recruitment and retention in clinical development process. And we do that through a software as a service, which works on any internet-based browser-enabled mobile device, which is now about 60% of the world's population have access to internet.
Can you talk about the software and how it works?
Absolutely. It's a B2B, business-to-business software, which helps biopharmaceutical or a medical device sponsor or a CRO or a clinical trial site to configure a research study. It could even be a patient registry study or a natural history study. They can configure the software within days and stand up a study fairly quickly to screen patients remotely on any browser-enabled device. Those who are eligible can be informed and educated about the research study and then have the ability to enroll the patients through informed consent. Electronically, they can sign on a screen using their mouse or a keypad. And then they are in the study. And now, as they go through the study, historically, most of the clinical trial site visits require that patients travel to the clinical site on a regular basis, which is a huge travel burden for, particularly in the rare disease space, the patients are geographically distributed globally, and they have to rely on a caregiver to take the patient to the site. Imagine the burden of the family to do that. So what our software allows is once they are enrolled, they are able to participate with little or no visit to the clinic. Only if it is absolutely necessary, they can go to the clinic. And so they can now participate from a mobile device, from the convenience and comfort of their home. Think about this in the context of pandemic, ensuring that patients are safe. They do not get exposed to the coronavirus and infections in the clinic. It's a huge safety value. And also ensuring from a sponsor standpoint, without any delays in the clinical development process, they can execute the study.
But without supervision, how do you know the patients are taking their medications or following the protocol?
Great question. So the software allows the clinical trial staff to verify that the patients are on a daily basis. It has all the digital engagement to communicate whether initiated by the patient or by the trial staff by email, text, video call, audio call, and even complete clinical assessments. While having the patient on a video call, the clinician can complete an assessment or the patient can maintain an electronic diary of their medication, symptoms, and adverse events.
So this is currently, this is not just in development, this is currently in use.
This is currently in use, and we are excited after about 3 years of R&D and listening to over 2,000 stakeholders of clinical research, including patient foundations and advocacy groups, sponsor sites, CROs, and regulatory agencies. We have now launched this platform, and it's in active use by a number of research institutions.
When was the platform officially launched?
In the December of 2020.
And can you give us some idea of how many patients are actually using it?
So we just have a single study with 2,500 healthy volunteers whose food and nutrition is being studied by a major U.S. research university. A professor has a five-year longitudinal study where they are gathering data from 2,500 healthy volunteers. Like that, we have about 7 enterprise beta projects running on the platform. Although that research university has now progressed beyond beta into a live real study.
Now, you've spent quite a bit of time at NIH in Bethesda, Maryland. Could you talk about your experience there and how that translates into expertise with your new venture?
Absolutely. National Institutes of Health is obviously a world-renowned and probably the leading funder of biomedical research in the world as a single agency. Some amazing science happens there. And I was really privileged to be in the company of Dr. Anand Swarup's lab at the National Eye Institute in Bethesda, where I led the setup of a next-generation sequencing laboratory IT infrastructure to support the big data coming out of genome sequencing instruments for both animal models as well as human samples for retina and genetic diseases affecting the eye. And that led to numerous scientific publications. I was involved in several projects where we were on a mutation expedition. You know, which of the rare congenital diseases within a family, who is the culprit? You know, which gene is the culprit? Those types of expeditions, projects, as well as understanding the transcriptomic regulation of how certain gene expression can affect disease and healthy aging in retina. So that experience of having worked with big data from molecular scientific standpoint, combining that with phenotype data and multi-omic and clinical data integration and analysis, which led to about 15 publications since then. I was so mesmerized by how cool science is and the type of discoveries that can come out of that.
And also because of your personal experience that brought you to rare disease in the first place.
Absolutely. Without that, I would have probably gone on to be a staff scientist there.
Asha, thank you very much for your time. It's been a pleasure talking about your new venture. Thanks again for being with us.
It was great talking with you, Larry.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.